हरि ॐ सहनावावधु सहनाभुनाथु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Vrajanath, Gurudev, are the neophyte devotees described in verse 11.247 of Srimad Bhagavatam qualified for tasting rasa? A devotee who faithfully engages in worship of the deity in the temple but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general is called a prakriti bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. Right. So the point is he's faithful. He actually has faith in the Lord. He's situated nicely in devotional service, so he worships the Lord nicely, right? The difficulty is he doesn't deal properly with whatever's connected with the Lord. Does that make sense? That's like being nice to the person, but not nice to anything else connected to the person, his other family members or anything like that. Right? So it doesn't mean he doesn't have faith. That's the point. The point is his faith is there. Because they'll say, no, we believe in Krishna, this, that. The point is, no, his faith is there, but the dealings with others isn't properly. And also it mentions people in general. Right? Because the devotees, they'll be a little bit nice towards, but not so. But the karmis, then, they're just trash. like that. But that the problem is it doesn't work. They're all still parts and parcels of Krishna. Right? These are the group from which you show that kindness and compassion. Does that make sense? So it's like the Madhyama, he respects those above him. He's kind to those equal. He's compassionate towards those who are junior. Right? So the neophyte respects those who are above him. So that part's the same. But he's not necessarily behaves nicely with equals nor with juniors. So that's where the weakness is. Right? But it's not that he doesn't have faith in the Lord and that aspect. Does that make sense? That's not where the weakness is. Because otherwise, he's not advanced, meaning in the element of a relationship with the Lord. No, he's not advanced in what's connected with the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? That's where the weakness is.
Huh? What if when he comes across people who are too materialistic or angry?
Then you just avoid them. That's what it said before. It means those who are that, you just avoid them. It means if you have to interact with them, you're pleasant, and, whatever is the normal social etiquette. But outside of that, you don't spend any time or any extra effort.
But wouldn't you not spend any time or any extra effort with just general karmic leaders? What's the difference there?
The difference is if they're innocent, then you can preach, you can discuss Krishna consciousness, the practices of Krishna consciousness that they're comfortable with, taking prasad or things like that. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. Goswami, if they can progress to the stage of Shuddha Bhakti by the mercy of a pure devotee and become sadhakas, they may become qualified to taste rasa. Otherwise, they cannot. Right here, so to become sadhakas. Now, we can say, no, but it's in the neophyte, we're practicing sadhana bhakti. Why aren't we called sadhakas? It's only here is because the element is sadhakaness is not stable. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. Right? It's anishta bhajana kriya. So when it's nishta bhajana kriya, that means it's stable. So now it gives the solid result. Does that make sense? Like that. That becomes very dynamic. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of, you know, as we were discussing before, you have something, it has elements, but then you say it's something more. You know, when you see more of the manifestation, then you say, yes, this is. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Bill Vimangal Thakur is a shining example of a sadhaka or bhakti. The individual sadhaka is to be judged by his level of devotion, right? So that means is that if you like the person, you know, that's the first stage. But you like the person, what's connected to him, then that's further. That means you like them more, right? So it's not that here's the thing and that's less. It's a matter of it's in the lowest position, but the lowest of you know, actual, the state of reality. You know what I'm saying? Means then the coming to the Madhyama platform, then that's like, now that's the beginning position. Now this is serious. This is starting. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Level of devotion, can we say it is same like level of consciousness?
Level of devotion, consciousness? Yeah, because it's Krishna consciousness. That's what you're. It's just your, how much of Krishna you're conscious of. Right? You know, the Uttama is the whole, everything's Krishna. So it's not, like we're looking at it, okay, this aspect is Krishna conscious, and this is all nonsense, and this is, so the aspect that's nonsense is true, because it's not connected to Krishna, but we also don't see that that element is Krishna's that's being misapplied. Does that make sense? We're thinking it's something separate from Krishna. But the Uttama doesn't see anything separate from Krishna. It's all connected to Krishna. Like, so that means they're able to perceive Krishna in everything. It's not just that, because Krishna is doing everything. Krishna is the only thing. Because it's not that this vision of being able to see Krishna in everything, that kind of a thing, you know, your eyes go like this or something, you know. It's a matter of that your Krishna is all that's important, so you see Krishna everywhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. It's due to affection that they're seeing Krishna everywhere. We look at it that it's a, you know, just the state of realization, but that there is the state of existence is on the spiritual platform, but it's that attraction to Krishna, that attachment to Krishna, that makes it what it is. Right? Does that make sense? Because the element of liberation, that's just given by Nama Bas. Right? But the love is given by the pure name. Right? Is that okay? Yes, yes, yes. It means that's what Madhvacharya is pointing out, is that you can only know God by His mercy, by His grace, because you can use logic, you can use all these things, and that's not actually going to work. Because the point is by logic, you can come up with all these different things. Whether they're right or not is another thing, but logically, whatever way you present it, you can, in using logic, present it in the opposite way. Right, so you can actually only know Krishna by His mercy. Right, it means from Shastra and by His mercy.
So, from that, should we be putting more energy into consciously walking around trying to see Krishna in everything, or praying really hard for Krishna?
Means you're always praying for His mercy, but you're rendering service also. Means, in other words, you're praying for service, so you should be rendering service. Yeah, like that.
But we shouldn't bother trying to, like, forcefully.
No. See, the thing is everywhere means where your values are. That's where you look. You don't have to look where it's not your value.
Oh, okay.
You understand? Because there's unlimited things here.
Yeah.
Right? So you only, what you value is where you try to see Krishna. Does that make sense? Unless it's something that's recommended as part of the sadhana or stuff like that. You know, it's just like, let's say, somebody actually doesn't value people. You know, but the Shastra says you should properly interact with people. So therefore, then you do things because Shastra recommends. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, okay, so you don't like, so let's say someone doesn't really like to be around people. But that means he likes to be alone. So that element of that being alone, that aspect, that's Krishna. That being alone and whatever you find in that being aloneness. You understand? That's Krishna. You know, or someone likes food, so it's the actual, the taste of food, everything that comes, that's Krishna. You know, someone likes clothes, so it's actually, because Krishna is the one who's the nice dresser. You know, so it's all coming from him. But you only have to, outside of what's the recommended sadhana, outside of that in the world, you just look where you have a value. Because you're not going to see the other things anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Vrajanath. Who are the Siddha Bhaktas? Right, because it said there's the sadhakas and the siddhas, right, who can taste rasa. So he's saying that the sadhakas, meaning someone situated in steady devotional service, then they, by that steadiness, will be able to taste rasa, right? But those who are unsteady, then that taste is not a stable thing. That's the whole point, because the service is unstable, so therefore the taste will be unstable. But if you get the qualified, it means you get the mercy of the pure devotees, then you can come to that platform and taste. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now he's asking about the Siddha Bhaktas. Go on.
When the service is unsteady, does that mean that you're not in the right service, but it's not according to your...
No, not necessarily. It just means that we're distracted by the material nature. That's the main point.
But could be the other thing as well.
But that would mean that it would be very basic, because even you're doing something you don't like, you can still remember Krishna. You know, Krishna's not dependent upon what you're doing to remember him. Right? It just means you'll be comfortable and be efficient at that service and be satisfied, you know, on the material elements will be satisfied. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Goswami. Those devotees who do not experience any of the kleshas, whose activities revolve solely around Sri Krishna, whose association they have realized, and who always thirst to drink the pleasure-inducing rasa of Krishna prema, are called siddhas. They are of two types: samprapta siddha, those who have attained complete perfection, and nitya siddha, the eternally perfect souls. Okay. So, okay, they don't experience any kleshas, because everything will be seen in connection with Krishna. For us, it's that we're seeing it in connection to ourself, therefore this is good, that's not good. But if it's connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter, because whatever the situation, one will be absorbed in Krishna. So one's not seeing the problem, one's seeing the connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. Then all their activities are around Krishna, not around something else. And Krishna's association, they've realized that association, so that's what they're interested in. So they always are hankering to taste that rasa that is there in the association of the Lord. Okay. So then those who have attained perfection and those who are eternally perfect. So these are the two kinds of siddhas, right? So Vrajanath, who are the samprapta siddhas? Goswami, samprapta siddha devotees are subdivided into sadhana siddha, those who have attained perfection through sadhana, and kripa siddha, those promoted to the stage of perfection by the mercy of the Supreme Lord or his pure devotees. Okay. It means by practicing the sadhana very nicely, you please the Lord. Or kripa siddha is just the attitude is very nice, though the sadhana may not be that great, but the attitude is great, and the Lord is pleased with that, right? But it's recommended that one practice sadhana and pray for kripa, right? Don't depend upon kripa. Yes. Kleshas means disturbances. You know, adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhotic kleshas means the difficulties that come from the mind, difficulties that come from others, difficulties that come just from the material nature. Like now it's cold. That's coming from the demigods. Or, you know, a few months it'll be hot. Right? Does that make sense? You know, adibhautik is what comes from other living entities. Right? Adiatmik is just what trouble you give yourself. Right? So that means the others aren't enough. You know, you're not satisfied, so you have to harass yourself. Right? You know, because no one knows you like you do, so no one can harass you like you can harass yourself. You know, You know, it's like they said, if you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself. Right? Yeah, so they're not bothered by any of that because they don't have a false identity that's going to give disturbance. They don't have the false identity. They don't see others as in that same false identity, that I'm this body, so they're the body. So I don't see them as they're giving trouble. That's just their instruments for everything. Like the demigods, they're just supposed to make it cold now. That's their job, right? Does that make sense? But I become disturbed by it, so I think they're making. So the same way as I think those who are closer are making trouble, right? And then at some point I think the mind in that makes trouble, but the mind just does what it does. You know what I'm saying? It's not doing it to harass you. That's just what it does. Right? Does that make sense?
When it's cold, like you aren't physically bothered by the cold, and you can say, "Oh yeah, that's just the."
Yeah, but it doesn't emotionally bother you. It's just the fact. It's cold. So when it's cold, you put on more clothes. You understand? There's a difference between just it's a fact and it doesn't bother you. Just like the kids, it means, I don't know. Yeah, this will work and may not work. There's snow outside, right? So then they put on their coats and hats and run outside. The cold doesn't bother them, but they know it's cold, so they put on a coat. And if they take it off, they'll feel cold, but it doesn't bother them. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a person is standing inside looking outside, oh, it's cold, I hate this kind of year. You know, like that kind of a thing.
But they still... Okay, but they still feel cold.
It means the senses are there, but it doesn't bother you.
I understand, but I haven't realized it. So.
Okay, just like this. You're walking on the beach, right? This might work better. You're walking on the beach. It's middle of winter. You got your coat and stuff on, but it's nice. It's called what they call fresh, right? Around here we call it freezing, but there they call it fresh, right? So you're walking there, you know, having a nice walk, but you're feeling cold and like that, and that's as much as you want to tolerate. But if you look out, you know, out on in the water, there's some, you know, strange entities there surfing. It's freezing out. The water's freezing, but they're out there. But you don't want to be out there. You understand? So it's a matter of perception. That same amount of cold, you'll say that's ridiculous, and they say it's great because that's when the best waves are, right? Now that's Maya, right? So you know the best waves are when it's freezing, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Good Maya, though.
Good Maya. Yeah, but Waikiki's better Maya. There's bigger waves and warm.
Too many people, though.
Too many people, okay. Yeah, it's like that. What do you call it? Reminds me of that. So in the Catskills, there was a couple of Jewish guys sitting there, and they were, you know, sitting and talking. And then at another table, there were some Christian guys. There were some priests and that sitting. And they were discussing where they're going to go for a vacation, right? So then one of them said, well, hey, what about we go to Miami? He said, nah, too many Jews there, you know? And I think, you know, they mentioned some other place, nah, too many Jews there, you know? And then the one little Jewish guy kind of like, excuse me, I'm sorry, I just happened to overhear your conversation. I see you're in a problem, so I thought maybe I could help, you know? Like that, you know, you're worried about, you know, where to go and all that so there won't be too many Jews. It says, why don't you go to hell? There's no Jews there. Yes. It's always a problem. Too many people, right? You know. Okay. Okay, Vrajanath, who are the Nitya Siddha devotees? Goswami. The Nitya Siddha devotees have been described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.1.290 as follows. The Nitya Siddha devotees have achieved eternal blissful life, exactly on the level of Sri Krishna, and are able to attract Sri Krishna by the purity of their transcendental loving service. Their most prominent characteristic is that their love for Sri Krishna is millions of times more intense than any affection they may have for themselves.
Why does it say achieved? Is that they don't achieve, they have it?
They've achieved it.
Okay.
You know, the point is that you may have, but they've achieved something more. But also you have to remember the jivas are starting, the nature of jivas, they start from the neutral state. But they just, the nitya siddhas as we would talk about are the ones that move from that state to prema, right? So they've achieved that state, right? And then when we're saying about what was the other?
Samprapta
means they've come from conditioning up to perfection, right? But now when they say perfection, means they say, okay, complete perfection. But the perfection element means that you're liberated from the material nature. So therefore, when we say nitya siddhas, we mean those who were never conditioned, right? From this angle. And then those who were conditioned and then freed themselves from the conditioning and attained the prema, we'll say they're the samprapta siddha, right? But at the same time, is once they get to that position, they're nitya siddha. You know what I'm saying? So anybody who's already in the pastimes, they're nitya siddha. Does that make sense? Means in the pastimes from on the platform of prema, right? Because otherwise, you can be in the platform in the pastimes at the advanced stages of bhava. Means you're in the dham, but you're not actually directly in the pastimes. Does that make sense? That's why those gopis, they couldn't go to the rasa dance. Means they're there in Vrindavan, but they didn't quite have the adhikar to go and be involved in the pastime. Right? But then, from that experience, then the next time, then they were qualified, then they went. Does that make sense? No, because we're talking about those who are able to come to that platform. It means them. They are the nitya siddhas. Because then the jivas are actually following their rag. Right? So that way then the jivas are always rag anuga of the nitya siddha who are the rag atmika. But at the same time is once they attain that position, they're in that, and then others are following them. So from the other's point of view, then those jivas, then they're who are ragatmika, it means raganuga to the ragatmikas, we would call them ragatmika, and we would be the raganugas. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I thought of another example for yours about how it's nice, Maya. So once here is that they were coming here, there was a devotee, I don't remember, Bhakti John. Like, you know, I say, very unique character. He used to be the cook. And then he somehow or another, I forget who his sidekick was, and that they were sitting there, and some girl came or something like that. The one of them then mentioned that, you know, there's some new girl here. It says, yeah, but it's just stool, you know, it's just a bag stool, you know, because like that. And then Bhakti John said, yeah, but she's got all the stool in all the right places. Yeah. He was a very unique, you know. In New York, you have it like the Chinese area. Chinatown, yeah. So he had his deities because he would preach there. Then his deities were Radha Chinatown Ishwara. He was very unique.
Were they Chinese?
I'm not sure, but generally when they're in a place, the deities start to look like what people look like in that place. Like if you see the deities like in Mexico, they actually look Mexican. You know? Like that. I'm not sure. It's just somehow or another with time, with worship, they start to look like whoever. Because then, you know, because they look beautiful for that. Yeah. Okay, the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda. By the desire of the Supreme Lord, the sons of Sumitra Devi, Sri Lakshmana and Sri Bharata, descended to earth from the spiritual realm, accompanying Sri Ramachandra. Similarly, Sri Shankarshana Balaram descended to earth with Sri Krishna. With the conclusion of the pastimes of Sri Rama on earth, all the associates of Sri Rama return to the supreme eternal abode with him. Similarly, the Yadavas accompany Krishna down to the mundane plane. And at the end of Krishna's lila, they went back to Vaikuntha with him. Similarly, the Vaishnavas are also not bound by the laws of karma to take birth like ordinary mortals. So it's mean those who are in the pastimes who come down with him, like that. So then we want to follow in the footsteps of those devotees. Does that make sense? Okay. Vrajanath, Gurudev, so far we have understood your elaborations on Vibhava Alambana. Kindly explain the stimuli known as Udipana. Right, because that's the other aspect of Vibhava. Vibhava has Alambana, means the what it is that's attractive about Krishna, right? And now he's going to describe the stimuli, the Udipana. Goswami, objects and persons who stimulate Bhava are called Udipana. Sri Krishna's qualities, endeavors, embellishments, smile, bodily fragrance, flute, bugle, ankle bells, conch, foot impressions, places of pastimes, Tulsi Devi, the Vaishnavas, Ekadasi days, and so on, are all Udipana. Of Krishna's, so, in other words, there's the general attraction to Krishna, then there's something that you see that's connected to that, that at that moment then inspires one to remember Krishna. You know, or inspires feelings towards Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So the alambana is the general characteristics that attract you to Krishna. Just that completeness, it's there. Does that make sense? So that's always there. But then there's something that's happening at that moment. So that attracts, that specifically then is the cause of feelings. Yeah?
For example, Ekadasi.
Because then it's Krishna's day. Ekadasi is a day of devotion, so then that's the day you can hear more, chant more about Krishna, like that. Right. Of Krishna's qualities, there are three kinds: kayika, physical; vachika, vocal; and manasika, intellectual. Because right. There's his physical beauty, there's how he speaks or interacts like that, and then there's the moods that he may have. Right. His age is one of the main kayika qualities, as described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.1.309. The Kamara stage lasts until the age of 5, Pauganda up to 10, and Kaishora up to the age 15. From then on, one is known as Yovana, a youth. Right? So these are the five ages. So when we say physical, it will mean the physical attributes, but specifically the attributes of that age. Right, because the devotees are attracted to these different age groups, like that. So yeah. So for us, then this Kishor is the actual. That's the main focus in our line, right? Because Yovana means he's 16. That's when he goes from Vrindavan and does so many other things, right? Or it's at that most mature. So just touch below that matureness, right? Just below that. That's the actual main age, because that element of that youthfulness, that spunkiness is there, because at 16, then technically you're an adult, so there's a different kind of mentality, maturity. While this one down there, then it's the interaction of all those ages works much easier, like that. Does this make any sense? Because at Kishore, you're the biggest of the kids, right? But at Yovana, you're the youngest of the adults, right? So there's a different view, like that. So it's much more attractive.
So in the spiritual world, the eternal age is what?
It means the group we're working in is Kishore.
So even in the spiritual world, there's different ages?
Yeah, yeah. All those different pastimes are going on. Vaikuntha, he'll always be 16. You know, all those will be there. But anything where there's an appearance pastime and all that, then you'll have these different ages. So the younger ages means you have the aspect the cowherd boys like certain ages because of different kinds of games, but especially the parents, they like the younger ages and things, they have a different taste. Because in the Kishore, that's not the main age for the parental ras. Still, the relationship is there and he acts nicely. But when he's really small, that's when you hear all the interaction. Because then when he's like, when the Kumara, then he's just hanging out with the gopis all day. He doesn't go out at that time. You know, then when he comes a little bit bigger, then they get the calves and they go out for a little bit in the day. like that. And then when they hit Pauganda, then they are able to go out and take bigger, and then they go out all day. So then that means then the cowherd boys, that's their main time. The cowherd boys are also there when he's smaller, right? You know, gopis are kind of around, but it's Kishore that's the real age for the younger gopis, right? And does that make sense? So it's kind
you're
of
saying in the spiritual world, Krishna's manifesting all those different forms simultaneously, different rasas.
That's why Goloka is so big, because you have to have all those different pastimes going on, you know. So then you have that whole thing like that. And because you have unlimited devotees in each pastime, you know, there's a limit to the size how it goes nicely, right? So that means your braj aspect will be very, very big, because then you want to keep it smaller for the intimacy. Like that. But like in Vaikuntha, it doesn't matter whether there's, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 or a million, the same that opulence and that is still there. But at the same time, there'll be a nice medium there. Therefore, there's unlimited Vaikuntha planets.
So, overpopulation and Braj, possible?
No, because the spiritual world, you know, just like the material, is always unlimitedly growing. So there's always more space. Right? Because Goloka is 51% of the spiritual world, but the spiritual world is always expanding. So therefore, you know, there's always space. Yes?
The Vigita Maharaj once mentioned that when he first came along, he thought that the spiritual world is there's no place for him, because, you know, it's so full and already occupied.
No, it works. Kishore is further divided into Adi, beginning, Madhya, middle, and Sesha, end. The most prominent kayika, bodily quality of Krishna, is his sundarya, beauty and attractiveness, which is described as a perfect grace and symmetry of all his bodily features. Because symmetry is a very important element of beauty. If something doesn't have symmetry, then it's not beautiful, right? That was one of the tests they did. If someone's considered to be not beautiful, it's because there's something asymmetrical. That's all. It means if you just take one of the features and have it duplicated on the other side, then it's the same. It becomes that's so symmetry is the thing. So then when you're doing things, formal symmetry is they're exactly the same. But even in asymmetrical, there has to be symmetry. If there's something here, then there has to be the balance over here. Right? There always has to be that. So there's always symmetry. So that's what causes beauty. It's one of the main factors. Then it mentions here is, okay, perfect grace. So then that fineness, how it's carried and everything like that. Because you're going to have someone who is not doesn't have that symmetry, so they don't have, we'd say, your classic beauty or something like that. But how they behave, the grace and all that, then you'll consider them in that class. You understand? So it's not just the physical, because a lot of times you find people have physical beauty but no grace. So, you know, they're good on the cover of a magazine, a few shots like that, but to actually hang out with them is not actually very good. You know, like that. Okay. Prasadana, embellishments, including his attire, his style of dress, and his ornaments and jewelry. Right, so you have the, what is it, Sandarya is beauty and attractiveness, which is the bodily features itself, which is perfectly in how he moves and everything and deals, and then the paraphernalia, you right? Embellishments, right? How you say? Known here as accessories. Right, okay. Krishna's flutes, the one of which is always in his hand, are of three varieties. So this is all he's talking now about all the kayika, all the bodily symptoms that are causes of attraction, right? In other words, one's attracted by all this. So that's the alambana. So that particular group of things are what makes for the rasa, right? Because that'll be the stai bhava, because it's based on those group. But now any one of these is noticed or comes out, then that sparks the element of bhava. Does this make sense?
So you're saying Udipan is when you're focused on one of them. Lambana is just like, oh, Jen, this is all Krishna.
It's not so much focused on one. It's that one is that he uses the thing, what does he call it? Stimuli. It means it's what starts. It's like the catalyst. Because all of those are there, so you're attracted by all of that, but one of them happens to be just like, you know, how Krishna moved, or he got out his flute, or, you know, something like that, his ankle, sound of his ankle bells, or does that make sense? So any of these things, that's what starts that expression of rasa, that interaction, like that. But it'll go from there into whatever is going on. It just means what's the catalyst. So, in other words, the alambana is the field, and the udipan is from that field what's the catalyst to start the interaction. Because it could start anywhere. Does that make sense?
Then I would think for a devotee at a certain stage, it's always going on.
Yes, so this udipan is constantly happening. So all the bhavas are happening at once. The sthayi bhava is always there. There's always something in vibhava. There's always so all these things are happening at once. So that comment, we're only studying them one at a time. But rasa means all five are going on at once. You know, so it's just which aspect you're looking at. So it's all happening at once. Like that. It's just like when you're studying buddhi yoga. But you study it broken down into karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. But it doesn't function like that separately. Right? You may have a predominance at the time. So because the ashraya aspect of vibhava is prominent. Mother Jashoda is that motherly affection. Or someone's ecstatic symptoms are manifesting. That's the prominence. So they're stunned or something like that. But it's all part of the same thing. Just one may be more prominent at different times. But if you know what they are, then they can all be. You can appreciate the combination. Right? You know, it's just like a cooking. You know what each spice tastes like. Then you can appreciate how to combine them. You know, does that make sense? Otherwise, then you just taste. You can't tell what's there. But if you can understand it, you can appreciate what are all the flavors that are there. Does that make sense? Yes.
So when you hear stories like, you know, the extreme example of that, like the physician, I think, wondering, could you hear somebody, because they saw peacock feather and they went into remembrance of Krishna and they're like,
yeah.
That's like examples of that.
That means that peacock feather, in your example, that's the udipana.
Right.
Like that. But he already has those aspects, but that will remind him of all these other aspects of Krishna and like this. Right? So then that will then develop the sattvika bhavas, the ecstasy. Does that make sense? So that it just natural goes. But his point is the qualities are there. That's what you start with. The sthayi bhava is there. It's fixed. That's why it's called sthayi. It means fixed. But the dynamic is the vibhava, anubhava, sanchari bhava, and sattvika bhava. Those are always moving and changing. But the sthayi bhava, it's always fixed. Mother showed us always in parental ras. It doesn't change. Does that make sense? But the experiences that are there will be changing from moment to moment. Does that make sense?
What about the example of Jaruka, when the ecstasy got in the way of service? Was that?
That's the sattvika bhava. So he doesn't let the sattvika bhava stop his service. But it doesn't mean that it's not happening. But it's just he doesn't let it bother the service.
Is it common that it bothers devotee service? Just too much ecstasy? Or is because...
Yeah, it means you can't see, you can't move, you can't, you know, I mean, so you can't talk, you know, so it gets in the way. But it's just the way it works. It's so ecstatic, it's like that. So then depending upon the situation, then you may be in a position, you know, to adjust that, or it may not be necessary.
Yeah. So that's a common dynamic. You're always having to deal with that.
Yeah. Yes.
I was just wondering if Shraddha is a symptom of bhava. Shraddha is the preliminary stage.
Yeah.
Of bhava.
No, it's not preliminary. It means that's the earliest stage in which you'll notice the manifestation, the effect of bhava.
Yes. So as Vaishnava is a Udipan, so would you say that's one of the reasons why it's important to wear devotee dress in
It's just like if you walk down the street wearing a devotee dress, then you'll get a lot of that, you know, how you say, you get variety of, you know, possibly that namabhas and, you know, derisiveness, you know. Hey, Hare Krishna, you know, stuff like that. But otherwise, if you walk, don't walk, then who knows? So the point is it means you can fit in, that's your own mood, that's your own need. But as a movement, we're not trying to fit in. So that when devotees present that, no, we wear these clothes to fit in, as if the movement needs to fit in. We don't need to fit in. Everybody else needs to fit into us. It's God's creation. It's not their creation. So this idea, the reason we want to fit in, that's my own need. My own personal, you know, lack of comfort in it and stuff like that. Of course. Means it, does anybody, let's say you have a group of businessmen all sitting there in their suits. And a priest walks up in his outfit, or a nun walks up in her habit. Do they have a problem? I step back. Ooh, watch out for the nun. You know? Hey, can you fly? You know, all that kind of stuff. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so they don't have a problem. You know, or if a Buddhist walks up, they don't have a problem. So that's the thing is, the karmis don't have a problem. We have a problem. Because you can say, no, but they harass it. They harass anything that doesn't look like them. Right? You know, if they're in a suit, they're walking by and they're going to their friend, wow, hey, check out the goths, you know? And the goths are going, hey, check out the suits, you know? Like that. It doesn't. If they're not in your group, you harass. That's all. And they're taking it as if there's this wonderful, harmonious, loving exchange of, you know, between the karmis, and then we're the weirdo outsiders. It's like, hello, you know, wake up, you know, what dream world are you in? You know, it doesn't exist, that world. They talk about it on campus, you know, that's what they pay the professors to do. But it doesn't exist. That's why they don't pay them so much, right? Because if it existed, you know, they'd be making hundreds of thousands like the other guys that are getting something done, right? You know, isn't it?
I just thought it was interesting that it's, the Vaishnavas.
Because by seeing devotees, you remember Krishna, and then you remember like that. You remember the devotees, and you remember then Krishna. So that's the whole point about it, is that if you dress as a devotee, it reminds them of Krishna. Or at least then they want to know what's going on, you know, what's with the bed sheets, you know.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, we always know that, but it's right here.
Yeah, no, that's what Prabhupada said. Everything, all the points that Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes in all of his books are all in this book. So that was his point. You just have to read this book, you know, or the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Chaitanya Shikshamrita is all these philosophical points in the same order without the storyline. That's the difference between the two books. It means the Chaitanya Shikshamrita is just the straight philosophy of the Jiva Dharma, and the Jiva Dharma is that philosophy presented in story form. So you get the cultural context and everything like that. Well, the other one, you just get the philosophy. Yes.
So if there are devotees at all different levels, then why don't we ever see devotees like rolling around and, you know, like have to stop their service because they're in some sort of, or do they do that in private?
What goes on when they behind closed doors, rolling around?
Or is it so rare that it's like?
Because the Uttama is acting on the Madhyama platform, so basically he avoids that. Does that make sense? Uttamas that come down, like when Prabhupada comes down, he just doesn't do that. It means there's also the, I'm not sure it'll come across at one point, is that their manifestation are being carried away by the ecstasies, and there's three levels. One level is compared to a piece of cotton wool and the breeze. It's just, you know, a little bit of cotton, fluffy cotton wool. The slightest breeze and it flies, right? Then the example is a pebble in a puddle, right? And then the other one is a mountain inside the ocean. So all the waves, it doesn't move. So Rupa Goswami was that. Means his ecstasy was never seen. There's nothing on record right? At one time, they got a glimpse is that I think Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, because his speciality was reading Bhagavatam, because he knew the whole Bhagavatam, and he could sing the whole Bhagavatam in three different tunes, you know, the whole thing. So he was singing, and all the Goswamis were there. He was reciting. And then at some passage, then Rupa Goswami, you know, fainted like that. And somebody went to close to him to help, you know, pick him up or that. And their ankle was, you know, close to his mouth, and his breath, it was so hot, it actually burnt the ankle of the devotee. So that was the only time it was ever seen what was the degree of ecstasy. Otherwise, it's just they don't see it. So Prabhupada would generally also manifest that. Bhakti Siddhanta means all the acharyas, you just see them, that would be the standard, what they would use.
It's just like when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they just sort of, it seems uncontrollable, Lord Chaitanya and his associates.
Okay, let us say the girl is with the boy, okay? And he's done something stupid, right? Not insanely stupid, but stupid enough. Okay, but they're in an extremely formal environment. What does she do?
Go silent.
Yeah, nothing, right? Just quiet. You can just tell she's upset because she's quiet, right? Now, what happens if the same thing happened and they were at the house? Right? So in other words, it's very much the situation and the association also. Right? Because there, somebody's rolling on the ground, nobody goes, hey, wow, check it out, he's rolling on the ground. You know, hey, you know, got to get a picture of that. You know? You know? Wow, did you see on YouTube, right? You know, like that. You understand? So that's another reason that even if it was there, that you won't see it. But there, so these are all the eternal associates, so it's not a problem. And the people who aren't qualified, they're farther back. You can't see it. Right? Means, who's saying these things? Someone who's on that level. So he's saying what's going on. But your common person, he's way in the back. He can't even see this. Like that.
Yeah. Can we say during kirtan that's where the devotees manifest mostly? There's more of a manifestation of those kinds of emotions.
Not necessarily. It's just whenever there is. It's just that those particular types of sattvika bhava, but it's not specifically that it has to be in kirtan. It's any kind of interaction.
I was thinking it's a safer situation.
That's there, but for us, it's not so much of a consideration. It's just we're trying to remember Krishna, not forget him, right? Like that. So those who are, because you have to, as it mentioned here, as it was saying, their most prominent characteristic is that their love for Krishna is millions of times more intense than any affection they may have for themselves. Right? So people generally, as if things are, you know, fairly normal, have, you know, a good amount of affection for themselves. So you take that millions of times greater. Right? Now here, one has a material body, right? So it means, you know, it's only so much you can love about it, right? But now if you have a spiritual body, right, it is you, right? So you can love that a lot more, right? Now you take the love you have of that and millions of times more, right? Then that's the love they have for Krishna. So generally they're not so worried about. So that's the difference. So that's why we hear about it as something to aspire for. Like that. You know, so in other words, this going through is to increase the aspect of aspiration. Because this level is not so much, it's not understood by analyzation. Right? It's understood by the Lord's mercy. So it's by the association of devotees, they discuss about Krishna, it's one thing they do. But it's not like the Vedanta, where there you analyze it. right? Because then you can, and you can see where to apply it into your situation, how to bring it out of the material energy, out of that kind of that, how to bring yourself from it. So one can do that. In other words, you can get up to the just before bhava by one's endeavor. You know, it's of course the Lord's mercy, but it's one's endeavor is important. But beyond that, it's simply the Lord's mercy. It has nothing to do with endeavor. It's just the right mood, like that. So these things, when we get into them, then basically it's a matter of discussion to understand their uniqueness and the position of those devotees. You know, the position of Krishna. But otherwise, for us. Because for us, discussing this is still sambandha gyan. This is the fun part, the so-called, you know, how you say, much of the idea in the rasik line, it goes on, they're sitting here and they're talking about the taste. Of course, it's got a little bit more taste, but it's not millions of times. So it's not really there. All it is their appreciation of Krishna's position. The devotees is increasing. So it's actually sambandha gyan for most devotees, but they're dealing with it as if it's prayojana. But you have to have love for this to be prayojana. You know, I mean, you're actually tasting it. It is our goal, but it's not what you're experiencing now. You know, because otherwise, as I said, when we talk millions, literally he means millions, like that. And, you know, when you say millions, it basically means, just so it won't be too freaky, millions of millions. But, you know, just so it's not too freaky, they say millions. Because we go, for us, millions means a lot. You know? Like that.
The example of the cotton in the wind.
Yes.
And the pebble in the ocean.
No, pebble in a pond.
Pebble in a pond.
In a puddle. You know, because when you drop a pebble in a puddle, it immediately reacts.
So Rupa Goswami is like a mountain in the bottom of the ocean. So he's not exhibiting the ecstatic symptoms. So the example is to indicate some people are like the cotton and they can't control it.
It's just
how they are. And that's not good.
It's fine. But it's just generally, you know, Rupa Goswami set the example. So that's generally more the direction one would take.
Cotton should become like the mountain. Is that the idea?
It's not so much that. They're just explaining how it works. And then there's the example. So they're kind of two different things. There's just the facts of what's there, and then there's the example. You know? It's not that one's good, one's bad. It's not that kind of a thing. It's a matter of all these things are just showing the specialness of it. So that's why when you see devotees, some of them are more easily overwhelmed, some of them you never see, like that. So it just depends upon the individual. So all of this is pointing it out.
At the same time, we're instructed or we're told that the devotee does not externally manifest it, at least in public. So then it seems like, okay, in public it should be like the mountain in the ocean.
Yes, but it's not that they don't have the nature of the cotton. But it's just the public, because also the public view is not, how you say it? In other words, they could manifest that, but because of the instruction, they're aware of the environment, and the environment makes it where, therefore it doesn't manifest. You know what I'm saying? It's just like kids, they're not aware of the environment, that's why they behave the way they do. Adults don't, because they're aware of the environment. So as soon as you add the environment, it doesn't matter. So the point is in situations that aren't favorable, then one is careful about that. Kids aren't careful. Those who are mature are. So it's just a matter of being aware of the environment. That awareness automatically makes those things not so much manifest. Does that make sense?
Isn't there also the aspect of people will imitate it?
Those are other things. Here we're just talking the rasa, means all those things on how you're setting example, how to behave and all that. That's all will be in, you know, the abhideya, you know, like that, how the behavior of the devotee, the etiquette. So this is not specifically that aspect. This is just what's going on in this realm. Now, out of etiquette, one doesn't, because either people will criticize or they will try to imitate. That's because they think the external is the reality. They think the body is real. But it's actually the manifestation of the body is because of the mind. And what the mind is how it's behaving is because of the particular attachments of the soul. So you're trying to bring it back. So anything that will get in the way of people appreciating the subtler points and taking it steadily towards Krishna, those things are avoided. So that's the idea. Okay. Krishna's flutes, one of which is always in his hand, are of three varieties: Venu, Murali, and Vamsi. The length of the Venu is the width of 12 fingers. And the 12 fingers would be that big. He is as thick as the thumb, I mean this wide, and has 6 holes. So that means it'll be very high sound. The Murali measures 2 cubits in length, that means 3 feet. So that means that this is from here to the end of the fingers. Has a hole at its mouth and 4 other holes for various scales. He produces a most enchanting sound. The length of the Vamsi is the width of 17 fingers. Okay, so that would be 12, and that would be 6. That's 18, so then one less, that much. That's the length of Vamsi. He has 8 scale holes with half a finger's width between the scale holes. So they're quite close, so he can get very fine. The playing hole at the mouth of the Vamsi is 4 fingers from the top. So that means that much from the top. Whilst the last or bottom hole is 3 fingers from the end. Overall, the Vamsi has 9 holes. Right, so 8 for playing, 1 for blowing. The conch shell held by Krishna opens to the right with a clockwise whirl and is called Panchajanya. All the paraphernalia and personal traits of Krishna are infused with Udipana Bhava, which evokes love for Sri Krishna. Right? So the Udipana means that's what's evoking the love. It means the love is there, but what evokes it, so it comes out. As the devotee's attachment is stimulated, the devotee becomes filled with bliss, and Stai Bhava is produced within his heart. Right? So then that particular taste of that rasa becomes manifest, right? Means there is already a fixed one, but then that's when it comes out, when you're able to appreciate. Because Mother Yashoda is there doing things in the house, it's there. But when that Udipana is there, then that really comes out, you're able to appreciate it. Stai Bhava in turn crystallizes into rasa. At this point, we leave this topic, right? Crystallizes into rasa. The interesting thing about crystallizing is that crystallizing comes from a crystal. Like when they're doing, I don't know if you saw before, they were having the bulls, they were squeezing the sugar cane, they were cooking it. So then after you cook it, then you take out a small amount of it and take that and just, how you say, keep like beating it. And by doing that, it cools and it actually crystallizes. Once that's crystallized, you put that back into the rest of it, the big bulk of it, and stir it in, everything else crystallizes. Right, because you can't sit there and beat the whole thing. You only have to do a little bit. So, you know, crystallizing means that one bhava is turning into the next. Right, so the one causes the next, causes the next, causes. So, at this point, we will leave this topic, but we will continue with anubhava and other items tomorrow. Try to assimilate what we have discussed today, right? Because at this point, you don't want to take it into that taste. Now you're analyzing the 5 different elements of it.
Okay. Yes. So, the description of the different fruit of Krishna, they have in one certain edge, the Keshura, which is in the whole edge.
No, he has all three flutes. I'm sure when he's only this big, he doesn't carry around one of the Muralis, because that's it would be bigger than him. But you know.
I didn't understand why it was mentioned after the Kumara, Puganda, Keshura, and Yuvana. It is mentioned Keshura is further divided into Adi, Madhya, and Shesha. And the rest, what is the connection with Keshura?
No, he's just saying that that's what's there. Exactly. Right, because that has something special. So he's just discussed Keshura, that's all. Then the flutes are another thing, because he mentioned up here Shri Krishna's qualities, endeavors, embellishments, smile, bodily fragrance, flute, bugle, ankle bells, conch, foot impressions. So he's just touched on, you know, these qualities, embellishments, then the flute, and then the conch.
Yes.
Right? Because he just wants enough to show the thing, because otherwise if he gets into all those, then we may lose the topic. So it's not that that's what's being discussed. What's being discussed is the principle of what is Udipana. Right? We're not discussing now the rasa, otherwise then you can take any one of them and show that. But that's we're just getting what are the elements of rasa. Like that. Is that sound sense? Yeah. Okay, summary of chapter 27. Further consideration of rasa tattva. Part 1. Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, and Vyavichari Bhava. The next day, the two sadhakas, after having attended the noon arti, right? So now here it's also mentioned the two sadhakas. So that means, by calling them sadhakas in this way, by the previous discussion, that would mean that they would be counted as madhyamas. You know, they would be stable and steady. Otherwise, why were they getting such a taste when they got initiation and chanting the mantras and everything like that? Right? After having attended the noon arti and honoring the Mahaprasad of the Jagannath temple, arrived at the Radhakanta temple, thirsty for knowledge of rasa. Right. Yeah, just there. Divyasnath. Yes. Okay. Sri Gopal Guru Goswami had finished prasad and was ready for his meeting with Vijay Kumar and Vrajanath. So if he's finished prasad and is ready for discussions, that also indicates he's not eating too much. When Vijay Kumar and Vrajanath entered the room, they offered prostrated obeisances in front of Srila Goswami, who affectionately hugged them and made them sit down comfortably. Goswami. Yesterday we spoke about Bibhava. Today we will cover the three other Samagri Bhavas. Anubhava, subsequent as ecstasy, Sattvika Bhava, constitutional ecstasy, and Vyabhachari Bhava, aggressive ecstasy. We have already defined Vibhava as the root cause, which ignites Rati, loving attachment for the beloved within the heart of the lover. Rati churns up the Bhava that is latent in the Chitta, heart, and consciousness. Right, so here we can see chitta can be used in both ways. Chitta meaning the heart, but when we're conditioned, then we mean contaminated consciousness by chitta. Right? But at the same time, it also just means where the soul is situated, where the Lord is, where the mind, intelligence, false ego is. Or in the spiritual world, that means just that's where that whole affection, everything is experienced. Because it's still the principle of the mind, the intelligence, the identity. Does that make sense?
You're saying, in a sense, when you say mind, you're saying consciousness, you're saying heart.
It means they all are together, because that's what's in the chitta. The chitta means all that together. It means the soul, that absorption in the Lord, you know, engaging body, mind, and words, all that faculty, like that. That's the chitta, like that. Difference is that there it's pure, here it's contaminated. That's the so. That's why sometimes you see chitta referred to just meaning the heart, And other times, chitta meaning can mean polluted consciousness, depending on the context. That's what we were bringing up. Okay. Rati churns up the bhava that is latent in the chitta, heart, and consciousness of the sadhaka, the various emotions that manifest externally. Right. In other words, consciousness is what you're conscious of. Heart means what are the feelings towards what you're conscious of. The various emotions that manifest externally in response to this awakened bhava are called anubhava. Although the anubhavas, when externally expressed, seem to have a similarity to vikara, the physical transformations caused by loving ecstasy. In truth, they are internal emotions in response to bhava within the heart of the sadhaka. Right? So the anubhava is the emotion. The sattvika bhava, that's the external, the physical emotion. It means the manifestation. Right? Does that make sense? Stai bhava is that fixed love, that just that love that one has for Krishna. The vibhava is what sparks that love to come out. When it comes out, there's the emotional and there's the physical. Right? Does that make sense? In truth, they are internal emotions in response to bhava within the heart of the sadhaka. Nritya, dancing. Viluntana, rolling on the ground. Gita, singing. Kroshana, lamenting loudly. Tanumotana, stretching and yawning. Hunkara, making loud roaring sounds. Drimbana, yawning. Driga shvasa, releasing sighs. Lokan pekshita, being neglectful of people's reactions. Lalashrava, salivation. Atahasa, raucously laughing. Gurana, swooning. And hiccuping. Yeah. So hicca comes from Sanskrit. So you have a hiccup. Our anubhava, external symptoms indicating the presence of bhava. Right. So these are external symptoms that you can tell, but what it's the symptom of is a particular mood. Does that make sense? There's a particular mood that's there, but you can see that. That makes sense? It's subtle. So that's different from the ones that the physical is so strong reaction from one has problem functioning. That's another. This is the physical. You can see it within the physical, but it's indicating the particular mood that's there at the time. Vrajana, how can these physical transformations enhance the taste for rasa in stai bhava? Relishing rasa is actually an inner experience, whereas the anubhava symptoms find expression externally. How then may they be considered as samagri bhava, ingredients of rasa? Right? Because he's wondering, is that if rasa is what's being tasted, that these are externally manifesting, how are they ingredients of rasa? Because rasa is something that's tasted inside, not the physical. Right? Goswami, when the jiva's internal activities on the transcendental shuddha-sattva plane stimulate and nourish bhava, a variety of vaichitya, wonderful spiritual feeling, is spontaneously manifested. This transcendental variety infuses the heart with ineffable bliss in many different ways. Bliss causes vikara, physical transformations, which are exhibited as the ecstatic symptoms known as udbhasvara. When the heart is effervescent with emotion, the devotee is seen dancing. When his heart hums with joy, the devotee sings aloud, and so on. These expressions of spiritual emotion further nourish rasa. Because it means, in other words, these emotions then naturally go along with that element of loving Krishna in that particular way, yes?
So yawning is a spiritual emotion and also a material...
No, yawning is a symptom of that spiritual emotion. Right, just like you said, when the heart is effervescent, it means that heart is like this, then there's dancing. You see it in the body, because you know that's what the heart's doing, right? When it hums with joy, then there's singing. So in other words, it's a manifestation of what is the actual emotion that's there. So that emotion then adds a flavor to that specific love that one has. Right? In other words, there's that generic love, and then there's all these other emotions are there to add something to that taste. Yeah, but then there's a feeling. You yawn because there's a feeling. If you're taking it as tiredness, there's an emotion of I'm tired. Right? Does that make sense? Because there's that emotional aspect. Right? Let's say the kid is there and he's playing his game, but he's yawning. What do the parents say? Yeah, time for bed. But the kid doesn't notice that. Because he's involved in something else. But the point is that it indicates something else. But we take it as just a physical, because we relate everything to the physical. That's why these things are here, to point out that there's something. The emotional state is actually more important. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is we may say, yes, the emotional state is more important, but we tend to use the emotion, just like we use the body for our own purpose, we use the emotional state for our own purpose. So that's why it doesn't come to this level of ecstasy. Just like if you do something for yourself, it gives a certain level, it's a certain level of consciousness, gives a certain level of pleasure, right? But if you extend that pleasure to others, then it gives more. It's considered a higher level of consciousness because you're aware of others. Otherwise, others are there, but you don't care. You're just interested in yourself. So others are there. So you're sharing that. That's considered higher. It gives a higher level. Does that make sense? So it's that the level of consciousness then is what's there. So we're not used to that. Then when you're doing it because that's your duty. Now, see, extended is I'm still doing what I want to do. But I'm willing to share that with others. Dharma means I'm willing to do what I'm supposed to do. Right? So that's basically where the division between, you know, that's the division between the Vedic culture and the non-Vedic. The non-Vedic stops before what you're supposed to do. Right? You can say, no, we follow very strictly the rules, but those rules are established by those same people that are following them. They're not established by authority. You know what I'm saying? They're not coming from the Shastra. Does that make sense? So they never get to that point. So they don't know what's beyond. So because it's an unknown and it's something that's just not there in their culture at all, there's the concept of it. That I'm following, okay, what's established by the government or law or by tradition or our family, like that. So the idea that I'm following stuff that I'm supposed to do that's coming from higher authority, but the higher authority is never Shastra. That's why Dharma is not really fully understood. Because Dharma is what you're supposed to do. But what is all the things that we fight? Why do I have to do that? Why that means? Why do we have to wash our feet after? It means I was wearing wool socks. Wool is pure. So why do I have to wash my feet after eating? Or I went into the bathroom wearing my socks. Why do I have to wash my feet? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've been hearing this question for the last 30 years. You know what I'm saying? Why? Because, you know, the idea of Dharma is something I'm supposed to do. Just, they can't relate to. You know, Varnashram, no one can relate to it. Why? Because it's what you're supposed to do. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise we take, no, but we're following the, but which one? You're following the one that you're from. If you're from Europe, yes, we follow that tradition. Americans follow that tradition. The Orientals follow that tradition. And then there's the Aussies. Right? Does that make sense? Huh? I will leave it up to your imagination. But if you want it to be more inclusive, I'll just say down under. Because that also includes the penguins, right? You know, it gets everybody. Yes.
So, if we do want to follow the Christian culture, but we want to be brought up in it, but because some people seem to think that there's sort of no hope if you.
Let's try like this. Let us take a baby. Right? Can it do anything? Can't eat on its own. Can't, you know, I mean, it could go to the toilet on its own, but not in a way that you would consider, you know, cultured. You know, can't dress. You know, can't do anything. You know, can't, you know, drive. Can't, you know, pay the mortgage. Can't take out the garbage. You know, like that. Can't cook lunch. You know, can't do anything. But somehow or another, it comes to be, you know, this, you know, sophisticated, you know, worldly person who is comfortable moving anywhere. So how did that happen? Yes, but it was just, they just sat down one day and said, do like this, and then after that he was Mr. Perfect. No, that happens in the American movies. But otherwise, then, well, even he doesn't have to be taught, right? He just works it out, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, it was practice. You know what I'm saying? It was practice. So the whole point is that's why it's sadhana bhakti. So now you're practicing a new culture. Because for us, the Vedic culture isn't what's important. What's important is the devotional development. The Vedic culture is just the most sattvic social form you can use to practice your devotional culture within. Means you can apply it within the Western. It just has so many contradictory things that are just a disturbance to it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that the Vedic simply means you know the whole science, so you know what you're dealing with. You know the nature of what you're dealing with, right? The modern is just, I know how I feel, and I know how I want the other person to feel. So if I find a person that basically responds the way I want them to feel, and they kind of seem to, you know, annoyingly only kind of understand my feelings, because they should know everything about me, right? So then, you know, but it's all guesswork. But the Veda says, this is what a man's like, this is what a woman's like, this is what a wife is like, this is what a husband's like, this is what a parent's like, this is what a child's like. You know, it even tells you what a mother-in-law's like, right? So the whole thing is, you know how it functions, then you know what to do. But that for a society that's so proud of their science, they're so unscientific culturally. You know, so they only have science, but never apply it in their life. You know what I'm saying? It means you accept, no, it's in our life. I got a fancy phone. Yeah, but the point is that the fancy phone, you use it according to the culture, not according to the science. Does that make sense? Nerd is the culture. That's why they can use it. Right? The other people can't. They can just sit there and kind of look, you know, nice while they talk on their phone. You know, the guys look good, and the girls look mean. You know, it's like that. So the whole thing is, it's just there, but actually using it, then they don't have the culture.
For someone that does want to...
You know what I'm saying? So it's practice. How do they get to whatever they... It's practice.
But as you said, in other countries, they kind of they are not doing it in the way that makes it the easiest.
Yeah, so I'm saying you can use it. I mean, so it's just like, in other words, one engages one's family life in Krishna's service. So whatever it is that they're able to pull together and they're comfortable with his family life, if they engage that in Krishna's service, then that's great. But at the same time, there's complaints that family life is not going well. That's what the Vedas explain, how to make it go well. But then we oppose that, because then it's something I'm supposed to do rather than I want to do. So I'd rather, you know, behave like an idiot and create fights than, you know, do what I'm supposed to do and have a, you know, smooth family life. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty.
But for someone who is quite serious about wanting to pick this up, should they spend as much time as possible in places that are practicing this in the most effective way?
Right. Yeah, like that. Means main thing is, if you can get that association, that's better. But if not, then the books talk about it. Prabhupada's always talking about the culture. So then it's a matter of seeing that and understanding, because it's not a matter of what happens is someone takes, okay, it's a rule. But no, the rule is the form, that there's a mood that you're trying to manifest. Does that make sense? So it's not taken that there's a mood there, it's just taken there's a form. So that's the difficulty, is one can't see how the mood and the form connect and how there's an efficiency there. So either one can't see both, right? Like the smarta element can only see the form, but they're dutiful, so they do it. And the, you know, the more liberal person feels, you know, appreciates the mood, but doesn't understand how that form manifests it. Does that make sense? So both of them means miss the point. One by not following it at all, and the other by following it without the mood. Because the point is, as we see here, when we're talking about bhava, is that the mood has to manifest. You see it in the physical symptom. Right? So what's being said is we're gonna express the mood. We're gonna experience the mood without expressing it. So where does that leave one? Basically sitting in front of a wall, right? Staring at the wall. So in other words, that's Buddhism. So right? And that's why your modern liberals love Buddhism. Because there's no authority, it's just your own feelings. In other words, what the Protestants couldn't do, you know, the Buddhists are able to do, right? Means in other words, you go from Catholicism into Protestant, means you've gotten rid of authority, saintly persons, you know, the whole shebang. There's no authority, really, it's whatever you feel, but there's still some restrictions and all that, and kind of, you know, there still is that God and everything. But in Buddhism, it's just your feeling, boss, finished. You know, that's it. I mean, perfection. So, I mean, it's like it's the perfection of, you know, the liberals, you know, ideal religion.
So Krishna does get more pleasure out of a devotee expressing the mood in the form that he prefers.
But why is he doing it in the form that he prefers?
That's his culture.
Whose culture? Yes, if the consideration, this is Krishna's culture, so I'm doing this to please Krishna, Krishna will get more pleasure. But a smarta follows that culture because that's his smarta culture. We as smartas follow the Vedic culture. So Krishna won't get any pleasure from that. It's respected because they're in the mode of goodness, so they'll get the results of the mode of goodness. So the lifestyle will go smoothly. But it doesn't please Krishna.
But I don't think
devotees are going to have that much trouble with that one because not many people are smart. You have to know what a smarta is to see it. We have plenty of smartas. Okay. Because the questions that will come up that are doubts will always be that of the liberal or of the conservative. Because devotional service means the middle. You understand? So in other words, if it's, you know, so we have to follow that rule, that's the smartest side, right? And do we actually need it, you know, but devotional service, what's beyond, do we actually need? That's the sahajya side.
Oh, sorry.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's what goes on, but you don't have, you know, serious smartas, you know, means you have those from smarta backgrounds. You do have devotees like that, but they've accepted the devotional things, so they don't act as smart as, but they can follow the rules very, very nicely. For them, sadhana is not a problem. You know? For them, you know, making sure that's all devotional and all that, that'll be their main focus.
I guess I'm implying smarta Brahmins.
Yeah, I'm also implying smarta Brahmins. We have smarta Brahmins who have become devotees.
But then that means they're following the Vedic. Aren't you talking about smartas in any culture that just wants to follow?
That you can apply also, is that they're following the rules because you're supposed to, but because they'll get the particular benefit from it. you know, it means the Boston Brahmins. They're also, they're the smartest of America. You know, it means those are families. They can trace their family lineage back to someone off the boat of the Mayfair. If you can't do that, then you're not a Boston Brahmin. You may be from Boston, but you're not a Boston Brahmin. Right? So they can, and so that's their lineage. So they'll say, we're the real Americans, and everybody else are immigrants. Right? You know, they're the real ones, you know. Of course, they don't consider that, you know, maybe the, you know, that, Uruguay Indian who was, you know, native of the place, he's actually the real one, you know. And they came there, kicked him out, but they kept his turkeys. Right? They kept his turkeys. And, Does that make sense? So you always have that smart mentality. So that's what I was generally talking about. But it's a mentality. Does that make sense? Because here we're talking about the rule. If we're talking about the philosophy, we would call them Mayavadis. If we're talking about the cultural side of just following Dharma because you're supposed to, but for their own material purposes, then they're called Smarta. Right? But Smarta is their name. That's what they call themselves, you know? Like that. It's not derogatory. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So if someone has a nature which is extremely conservative or
right.
extremely liberal,
right.
they see the philosophy subjectively through their example.
Yes, they'll start there. But by association, then that'll be purified. But one has to understand that that's a good chance that that will be what will happen. But if they think that, no, I don't do that, then it may be a problem.
It seems that a lot of what we call controversy...
It's all coming from that. I mean, you look at it. Where is it coming from? It's all coming from, basically, it's all going to start with the liberal, because the conservative doesn't have a problem with it. He already does it. He may or may not understand it, but that's what you're supposed to do, so that's what you do. It's the liberal that, why do I have to do this? I don't feel like doing this, so why should I be made to do this? This is abusive, right? You know, they have all these nice terms to make it sound terrible, you know, like that, you know? So it's a good thing that, you know, like how you say, you know, the 3-4-year-olds can't, you know, aren't on Facebook. Otherwise, you know, it's abusive. My mother makes me eat my carrots, you know, like that. When is this tyranny going to stop? You know, like that. You know, 1 million, you know, 3-year-olds march on Washington, D.C., you know, like that, you know. And they, you know, they distributed free lollipops and Kool-Aid, right? something like that. You know, but it's but otherwise it would be a thing, you know. So the point is if you look at all the issues, I mean, every last one of them, they all come down to this. They're not spiritual. They're just material things. They're the issues of authority issues, you know, restrictive issues. Things that I'm not used to doing, why do I have to do them? You know, being asked to raise yourself to a higher standard of culture. You know, why can't I just be low class? What's wrong with being low class? You know? Like that, yes.
Also, devotees can get militant about whatever it is that's important to them.
So yes, yes. But that's the pranamoy.
They're Niyamagraha, you have to be this if I think it's important.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's just, he's following a smarter lifestyle.
No. They take that element. It means the liberal has a very narrow, if not narrower. You know, it's probably, it means environment. It means like the liberal can function in a wide range of liberal activities, but they can't function outside of that. But the conservative wouldn't know how to behave in a liberal environment. He'd be a little stiff. But he could sit there and smile because you're supposed to. But the liberal could not function in the conservative environment. So actually the liberal is more narrow-minded than the conservative. But they have a... Yeah, it means, oh, you like that. Oh, you're going along, yeah, you know, a kid did this today, and I said, you said that? It's like, where did that come from? You know, it's like, this might, you know, kid, you know, what's it? Why is it the way you deal with your kid? That's the way the universal law.
I remember criticizing because my 3-year-old daughter sat in class. Oh, she's free. Why does she sit in class? And she was perfectly...
Yeah, yeah, the point is... No. All it is what it means is if your 3-year-old can sit in class and not make trouble, then it makes them look like bad parents because their 3-year-old cannot sit in class.
I'm abusing
her. That's all. No, you're abusing her because, so what, you're supposed to leave her at home alone or you're supposed to be at home with her and be in Maya? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. No, but I'm just saying is that's all. So you can see it's all about we don't want to be restricted. We don't want to follow culture the way we should, right? But now if they're having a little party at their house and friends over and their 3-year-old makes a stink, you know, then it's like, you know, hey, she's untrained. She's this, that, you know. It's just, so all they're doing is choosing what they think is standard, what is dharma. But the point is why can't a 3-year-old? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was chanting 64 rounds at 4. You know what I'm saying? So why can't it be done? You know? So if we want to say all second generation has to be really, really ordinary, you know, then hey, you know, like that.
I was also thinking about the point that...
Oops, we're over time.
Yeah, it was making, sometimes it's hard when you're in a temple that doesn't have nice standards, but you can also influence that.
You can't, if you can influence it, great. Otherwise, you just get by, and when you go home, you do whatever you like. Point is you don't have to make trouble. Because the point is, let's say that particular aspect of varnashram or that, it's not that that's what's important. It's just useful in devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Someone's cooking and they're using a spoon where they should use a spatula. But it's just harder. You know, how do you scrape the bottom with this much of the spoon? You know, the spatula is that wide. It works better. But if it works for them. Like I was the other day I saw someone, they're boiling milk. You know what they're using to stir it? A whisk. And I'm sitting there go, how does that work? But they're quite happy with it. You know, so hey, cool. You know, so it's just a matter of, it's not the it, as long as it works and they're comfortable with it, okay. But if something is theirs more efficient, you do that. You know what I'm saying? That's all. Okay. Well, thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema ki.
It's
talking about prema, which is in the category of prayojana. So this is a prayojana tattva. But I'm saying on our level of realization, it's just sambandha. We're just learning more far out things about Krishna and the devotees. It's not that by hearing about this stuff that it you know is bringing out all these ecstatic emotions and everything else. As one can see by the conversation.
That's what it's right.
It veers off into, you know, one side or the other. All the questions. Because when you get into this topic, it's so clear. You know, previously that it's not, but in here it's just so clear where which direction.
So to ask to go into something to bring up some emotion, some taste.
I guess yeah, you're discussing rasa, so you bring up some rasa. But no, but it's just, the point is this is just explaining the facts of that position. The facts of that position.
What's the duty of the students whenever they can see it? Maybe there's some kind of like it's a little bit like hijacked, you know, the class gets kind of like hijacked somewhere.
That's there, but it's
I'm not quite sure what to do with it, because at different times, different individuals hijack it. So it's just a matter of it hits something that resonates with them, then they do. Just some people have a wider range of resonance. So. They're able to hijack everything. So. But the point is then you can see where it is, so that you can analyze on how to deal with that.
Thank you, Maris.
Okay, thank you both.